another day, just 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 another day in the life. Hello, and welcome to another episode of As I Reflect. What you caught in the beginning of the episode, as well as what you may hear soccer playing in the background, is a little bit of my favorite artist, one of my favorite pianists. His name is Bruce Hornsby. You may be familiar with one instance of his work, and that is a song that was sampled by Tupac Shakur and his producers and company when he decided to do the song Changes. The name of the song is The Way It Is. And the reason I've chose this song, chose to reflect from the balance, I'm sorry, from the platform of this song, is because it's something I've struggled with for a very long time. And hearing this song and analyzing its perspective, the song has a very, very powerful idea of projecting a present moment when things are unfair. And the song expresses that unfairness. And then eventually it says, that's just the way it is. That's the way things are. And then eventually the song turns itself on its head. But don't you believe them? And essentially, don't you believe them when they say that's just the way it is? And something I've been struggling with lately is understanding the perspective of reality, of understanding the term, it is what it is. And I've been hearing this term in my head. What, you know, the question is, what do we have control of? What can we control? And one thing that uncertainty does in these moments are extremely uncertain for a lot of people. What can we control? What can we do to save ourselves, to save our loved ones, to take care of ourselves, to make sure that we don't succumb to the circumstances? And I believe that there's a very powerful message there about control, and that's something in my mind that's starting to gather from a spiritual standpoint, upon my own reflection. And one of the things that I've been reflecting on, and I'm going to try to explain these grandiose ideas as best I can. Not that my brain has somehow elevated beyond the natural, but I do believe that I've gained some insight into the human side of what we might be suffering, what might be happening now, and what might advance us a little bit further and help us grow a little bit stronger. And one of those things is the understanding that the most power you have at any given time is over the self. And I know that the parameters of our jobs, the parameters of our relationship, calls for what we think is more control. When I enter into a relationship with somebody, I have to control more. There's more to control. When I have children, I have to control more. I have more to control because the sense of security and safety has been cast that web of security has been cast a little bit wider. And we now have the responsibility of another young person. And myself as a teacher, I worry about what I have to control in my classroom in order for learning to happen. And I believe that my sense of control begins to extend beyond myself. And I think one of the things we've neglected during this time is the power of communication. And I think that what I want to discuss is the reason or the reasons why we've lost that sense of the ability to communicate beyond ourselves and communicate in a way that's healthy, that drives the power and control over self, and that helps people agree to be a certain part of, to be there, to play their role in a relationship, in a circumstance, at work. And I've been scaling the ideas of leadership as well, but I do want to balance these ideas I'm about to share off of some very powerful text. And as we go into this, I would like for you to take the journey with me, and hopefully they will encourage you to kind of pick up these texts and kind of use them to your advantage, as I hope to eventually be able to capitalize on what I've learned from them. But the two texts is one of the ones that comes to mind that absolutely changed my life is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And a new text, I read Daring Greatly probably over about 4 years ago, and I read it over the span of a year. But Daring Greatly by Dr. Brené Brown, and Sister Citizen by Melissa V. Perry. These two texts have, for myself, caused for a self-reflection that leads to evolution. And we battle with the word of evolution a lot, but I want to provide a practical use of this definition. And I simply mean an evolution caused by, or changed, caused by a need. And I think that that's how I gather the understanding of evolution. I cannot stay in the form that I'm in and expect to survive in the world that I'm in. It means that it's going to cause for transformation in order for me to capitalize and be able to be the strongest in a specific environment. And I believe that our environment has begun to transform. And because our environment has to transform, we must also transform in order to capitalize, not only just to survive it, but also to capitalize on what it means. And I think that sense of capitalization comes from the bedrock of communication. And I just want to discuss how the stories in these books, Daring Greatly and Sister Citizen, have led to my understanding of some of the things that kind of led us astray when it comes to communication. Again, this is pontification. Again, this can appear to be dogmatic. And I do not in any way see myself as a demagogue. I just want to, in troubling times, share where my brain in a more spiritual sense is going. So I don't want you to believe this is undergirded by some research, or I would say elaborate research on my own. I'm depending on these texts to provide me with ideas that kind of catapult me to a place where I can make some conjecture. And the first conjecture I would like to make is both of these books deal in extremely well. And if you want to know what shame means for a human and what it does to a human person, start with Brené Brown. Start with looking at some of her work and looking at what shame means for us. And I know we've heard the word before, but when I tell you this text, Daring Greatly, and most of Brené Brown's work on vulnerability does a great job of exploiting this sense of what happens to us as humans, as a human family, as an individual, when we encounter this very, very, very powerful idea of shame. And I want to deal with it in a more practical way later on, but the idea of shame in Brene Brown's sense is a more of a human experience. And then when I look at Sister Citizen, she does, when she talks about shame, she takes it from the idea of what it does for human, and then she takes it, she breaks down the idea of what it does for African-American people, what it has, how it has affected African-American people, and how shame has been used to control our community. And then eventually she goes into how it exploits the lives of African-American women. And the reason why I think my journey as what I'm calling as a feminist right now, the reason why this journey is so important to me, beyond having all these women in my life that are extremely important, beyond having all, you know, my loved ones being women, beyond that being my exact counterpart to this life, I believe that there's something very revelatory about the relationship that I have with women, and that women, their place in this world. And I do believe, I'm going to be honest, there's something deep seated in me that's very spiritual, that calls for a very special place for the African-American or woman. I believe that she has a specific power. And this does not negate the power of women as a whole, but I think the journey of the African-American woman, and that's why I would entreat you to visit Sister Citizen, regardless of your background, regardless of your ethnicity, because I think that she's able to unfold the idea that of what I'm talking about. And this is not a new idea with Melissa V. Perry. I think that Toni Morrison is another writer who does an amazing job of breaking down the very beautiful nature of the struggle that the African-American woman has had to suffer and what it could possibly mean for our world. And there are others, and I'm, you know, of course I mentioned Toni Morrison a lot, but there are others, Zora Neale Hurston, Nella Larson, who break down the journey of the African-American woman and make it more viable and more tangible of an eye, of a concept, that is, for us to understand how significant the life of the African-American woman is. So with that being said, these two texts have kind of opened my mind to a world of where I understand a little bit better of the struggles we might suffer. And I myself, I mentioned in the past season that I'm in counseling. And one of the ideas that I've been struggling with, dealing with when it comes to self-love, is how do I take this self-love and turn it into something powerful so I can love a significant other? At this time, I've realized that the more powerful I am of a self-lover, the more powerful I am as a lover of others. And that's one of the things I've taken myself on the journey of. And I felt like what's significant to that is not only to understand my own shame and how that's kind of become revelatory of what's happened in my life from Brene Brown. It also curtails a story that it's deep-seated in my own life, being that I'm a son of an African-American woman. I'm the brother. I've been the lover of African-American women. I'm the father of African-American women. So those are the things that kind of resonate with me as a person, and I believe is revelatory of my own life and what's taken me on that journey of trying to understand a little bit better what it means. So in this segment, though it's about a little bit 13 minutes into this segment, I do want to kind of look at shame from Brene Brown's perspective, more of a human experience. And kind of treat the idea of how I feel like it's led us astray when it comes to communication. And looking at the idea of shame as provided by Brene Brown. And one thing I'll treat it later. But one thing I want to kind of pull out from the definition that she has is the idea that we become unworthy of connectedness. Our own idea that shame makes us where we're not worthy of connecting. And this idea, I think, does not happen. And she does this, she treats this, and I would like, that's why I'm begging you to read it, is because it doesn't happen at an older age. It's something that is a very progressive, kind of like a seed that's planted, and then it grows with experiences. And in the human experience, because we are naturally connected, what happens when this idea of shame evolves, it becomes something that becomes the rip and tear at relationships slowly, because we don't understand our reactions and because we don't understand our own ways. We believe in essence that we're doing what's best for us, for who we love. We're actually thinking that these protective armors that we develop for ourselves are necessary. But that's one of the things that Brené Brown admonishes us. Shame eventually evolves into this core, this outer core with us, where we begin to protect ourselves from that feeling of shame, of what we think we're protecting ourselves from. And if you delve a little bit into her work, you find out you're not protecting yourself from much by developing these hard outer cores. And then this is where I think where the communication becomes essential, but in the instance of where people are protecting themselves, it becomes diabolical. And one of the things that Brené Brown spells out in a very, very prolific way in her work is how shame, or that protective nature that we develop because of shame, and our fear of not feeling worthy of connection, is we develop this the shell that not only keeps out the bad. Yes, developing that shell will naturally keep you away from bad things happening. If you turn down an outing that makes you run into other people where you know you're not familiar with those people, yes, you may run into somebody who's unhealthy for you. But in this same instance, you're not only protecting yourself from the bad, but you're also keeping yourself from the good. And that's where all the, you know, people make all these sayings. We have these sayings, you know, hurt people and things like that. And that's revelatory. And that's, of course, it has its place. But these simple cliches that we lean on and depend on to kind of help us understand why they're dismissive. Hurt people hurt people. Everybody, eventually, once you've lived long enough, is going to be hurting. So what do we do as a response? You know, how do we evolve and change to kind of capitalize on some of the pain? And I think that that's where Toni Morrison, her work, and also with the interconnectedness to Toni Morrison, Brené Brown, and Melissa V. Perry, and all these beautiful women who are doing all this amazing work, and Toni Morrison, who has done her work, and we're so thankful for her part. And left a growing and an extensive legacy. And I pray that we continue to read Toni Morrison until we're done with this earth. Because of that connected nature of their work, of what do we do with the pain? And I think that that's what we need to ask the question. Not throw a cliche at it. Not deeming people with a label so we can move on with ourselves, or we can continue to protect ourselves. But finding out how we can come to a sense of healing. And I believe that that is done with communication. Communicating with the right people, which is one of the things that Brené Brown does so well of explaining. It's how do we communicate with the right people who are going to help us to be more healthy? And how do we communicate with anybody who's going to be a part of our lives to make healthy decisions? And I think that that's become so essential for me, as I see, as I move, and as I vibrate through this world, and I'm sending my energy out, which I don't have a choice. I mean, I'm going to be a part of something. I'm going to be a part of people. And how do I send out positive and growth energy to where I can evolve? And this is something I came up with yesterday that came up in my mind. I don't want to take credit for it because I don't want to make it seem like it's this prolific idea, but I realized that in order for me to continue to grow in love, that I have to evolve. That's where my power is. But evolving can be a difficult process, moving out of these shells. And I've talked about the idea of a butterfly before, moving out of a chrysalis, breaking these shells, as I take that from Indy Ari, is the person I'm coming up with, where I hear the idea of breaking the shell. I realized that in order for me to be able to love, I have to evolve. But coincidentally, in the same paradigm, using parallel structure, In turn, in order to evolve, I have to love. And this sense of change and this sense of growth, I have to continue to love. And I will take it in a very more practical sense where I think it can be more palatable for most. When you think of being a parent, the idea of parenting a human that is walking a road you feel like you've been, you realize that your sense of parenting evolves. It changes. You don't parent a child who is a baby the same you would parent a child that is an adolescent. And I think that idea of love, this strong love that you have for this beautiful life, begins to change and evolve as they experience different things where you've been. And then you begin to reflect on stages of your life. So I think that's more of a practical way of seeing what I mean by, in order to love, you have to evolve. And you have to realize that evolution is reflective as well, because they're living the same life cycle span that you are. However, they're doing it in a different time. In many instances, a different space, with a completely different context. And depending on if you're a man fathering a daughter, if you're a woman fathering men. So with slightly different, no, I wouldn't say slightly different, can be a chasm between what your world looked like and what theirs looked like. And I think that our world is begging us to evolve. And I think that that's one of the spiritual inclinations that I've been raising myself to. And I'm not talking about an evolution that means, and I think that many of us don't understand that in order to get rid of or be able to sustain a life beyond COVID-19 and coronavirus is that we must adapt, our bodies must adapt to it and grow strong enough to defeat it on its own. And that's what vaccines mean. Of course, everybody knows that. But that's the inclination that I taught, that I felt was revelatory, is that as we respond to something so horrific, so dangerous, in order to, we don't just adjust to it. We don't adjust to the nature that it has adjusted our normal. What we must do is evolve around it, become stronger than it so we can defeat it. And so if you understand vaccines, you understand that it must be introduced. It must be put in. It must be given to you in small dosages so that your body develops antibodies and things like that. So with that understanding, pain itself, there's a new type of pain that has come to teach us a brand new story. That's come to teach us a brand new lesson. So with that introduction to these small dosages of this different type of pain, we don't understand where we grow in our lives. We must evolve. And in order to do that, we must love. We must love ourselves. We must learn to love a country that has seemed to reject African-American people and, in instances, African-American women for so long. We must love and we must evolve that love in order to where it fits the people we love. The love we give them must fit them. We have to put on for them what they need to provide for their needs. And I think that this time is calling us to evolve that sense of love, to prepare a new love for the African-American women who have provided so much for this country, for so much for African-American men, so much for their communities. We must evolve that sense of love so that they have a legitimate place in this arena that we call life. With that being said, also, we must evolve our own sense of self-love. This is one that was difficult to me. I grew up always, and as a young man, one thing I always loved was the idea of a hero, somebody who came to sacrifice everything. And the first hero I was actually introduced to, in a very practical nature, in Sunday school class, was the idea of the being of Jesus, this being who essential in its essential nature was God and perfect, decided to be man imperfect in order to cause salvation. And this story was, for me, even as a child, difficult to understand. Now, you come all the way up, from up here to do this, you know, and why? And of course, the automatic answer is that's a different type of love. That's a very, very strong sense of love. And I think about that sense of sacrifice. And I think, and one thing I grew up with, I grew up in the black church. And one of the things I remember my pastor saying as growing up, even though I myself have evolved and moved away from those since the practice of Christianity, in the same sense, I do embrace a higher power. And one of the things I remember him saying is that type of sacrifice that Jesus has done or that Jesus did does not have to be done again. And one of the things I remember him cycling around or developing that idea around was the text that says that we crucify Jesus over and over again when we make these the decisions of sin. And that shouldn't be done over and over again. We shouldn't be crucifying him over and over again. And the idea of that sacrifice was enough. It covered a multitude of sin, if you will. And that he's the first idea of a hero that I was introduced to. I was like, when I was a child, I was like, wow, you know, that's love. That's the idea of love that I attached myself to. So anytime I met new heroes, and I'm talking about in a practical sense, Spider-Man, Superman, my mom, which is one of a huge hero in my life. That's one of the things I attached it to is the idea that these people are making sacrifices. And those sacrifices often negate their own sense of health and need. And I believe this evolutionary love has become a strengthening of the self, a powerful sense of controlling the self so that I can evolve into this new sense of love. So this love must in turn on me. And this is one of the ideas that Brené Brown embraces as well. She talks about self-love. She develops the idea of self-love. And she talks about how we have to start giving us ourselves the same speech, the same love, the same care and attention that we give to other people. We must in turn begin to stop telling ourselves so many negative things that are unhealthy. And that sense of shame that she goes to explain does this as well. It becomes a voice for us. And in our heads, we tell ourselves some very negative things that we hope to live through. But what we're doing is bashing and killing the spirit of ourselves. And we have to in turn turn that same love that we intend for our children, that same love we intend for our coworkers, the same love we intend for our romantic partners, we must in turn turn that love into ourselves and learn to love ourselves better. And I believe that's where the evolution starts. Because we're making ourselves stronger for our love, the love we want to give others. And one of the things she does in one of her works, and I don't want to say it may not be daring greatly, so you may have to visit some of her other things. One thing she also treats in her work is the idea of, yes, it is possible to love somebody if you have a difficulty loving yourself. However, that love will be, it will be reflective of that self-love that you have. Whether it's very low, if you don't love yourself the way you deserve, it's going to reflect in that relationship that you're giving someone else. So even if you feel like you're pouring into them, it becomes very, very difficult to do because of that lack of self-love that you have for yourself. And this is kind of where I want to kind of close this part of the segment out. In my own experiences, and this is a very vulnerable spot for me, in my own experiences, one of the places I can remember as a child, I remember my father. He was, of course, my parents were divorced by the time, I don't think they made it out of me being one when they started to consider a divorce or get divorced. And by the time I was maybe a teenager, maybe 12 or 13, my father was attempting through his struggle with being addicted to drugs. And now I understand that itself is a disease, that he was struggling with something that was controlling him, essentially. But he would make promises to come, to spend time with us, to come see us. and a lot of times fail on those promises. So a lot of times, and I would stand, there was this window in the front of our house that, you know, gave us a view of the street in front of us, and our front yard, parking, you know, and the driveway and things like that, and our neighbor's yards, but the street gave us a good view of the street. It was a pretty big window. And I would stand at this window periodically throughout the day my dad had made the promise to come to be with us, to spend time with us, me and my brother. I'm speaking about me and my brother when I say us. I would stand at that window for hours waiting for him. And my mom would have to tell me to go to bed. His promise could have been made for, hey, we're going to do it in the morning. I'll come sometime in the morning. And I would stand at that window, fully clothed, fully prepared to spend time with my father. Even through the night, even peering out my own window that gave me a view outside at times. I would look out to look for my dad to see if he would come late, you know, just to even say hello. And this is where I think that my own deep-seated need of love and attention led to shame. I wasn't aware at the time of what he was struggling with at all. But I was aware that I wanted and needed him. And one of the things that Brené Brown indicates, and one of the things that Melissa V. Perry indicates in her work, is that when the weaker or the need is asked for from the other, from someone we depend on, and they deny us or essentially reject us, we begin to question our value. And that's where the lead of shame comes in. We begin to become ashamed. We begin to think that we're unworthy of connection. So that's one of the places in my life where I know that I begin to think for myself that, you know, I'm being rejected. So that means I have lesser value than others. And I think that even as I find it difficult to share this this indication with others, I believe in turn that this power, this sense of this story has its new parts, more clearer parts. My dad was struggling with the disease. As a child, there was something authentic in me that wanted that sense of love. And by grace, it never went away. Because in a lot of times in these situations, we become hardened. In a sense, I did. I chose, you know, sometimes to play the tough route, but I knew, I was always aware that I was doing it. And some of you may experience the same, where you're aware that I'm toughening myself up so I don't have to deal with the blows. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to shorten this up. I do have an interview that I'm going to share with you in this episode of me and myself, with a very dear friend of mine who shares an applicable experience of her experiencing a sense of shame. But I do believe that this moment has brought me to a sense of power. What do I do with this energy now that I'm a father? What do I do with this energy now that that I have these students who are dependent on me to be strong? What do I do now? And I think the what do I do now is that I evolve from that moment. It's going to take a very special love. It's going to take a new type of love in order for me to learn first that I have to love myself in order to be strong and give a strong and more powerful, more meaning, more life-changing sense of love to others. And I knew that this, I essentially knew that this episode, because I was aware that I'd probably share something like this, and I don't guide myself in these episodes. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't. I give myself some kind of like points, kind of like, you know, some things I want to treat, but I don't know sometimes where I'll go. And going down the road of being vulnerable is always difficult, but I think that I love myself enough that I can share an experience that was tough for me, revelatory of my childhood, revelatory of what my parents might have suffered or my dad suffered, without shame. This evolved sense of love means that this story has given me power. And I have the power to understand that my dad was struggling with something that penetrates through African-American and poor communities, Latinx communities, and even white communities. Drugs have caused our world some great pain. And we still haven't learned with the pharmaceutical community, leaders, the pharmacy leaders, the owners, people who make the drugs, the people who are trying to capitalize from them, don't understand the great implication of what that means for our world just yet. And I pray that they will. I pray that we'll learn that money is not a good religion to have. But I am extremely thankful for this experience. I'm extremely thankful for my new power, the power over myself, the power over my own thoughts, the fact that I can change and adjust myself anytime I want to, that I think particular. But I do want to end on this. In order to love, we must evolve. And in order to evolve, we must love. That's just the way it is.